Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
All right, 4:02 on this busy Tuesday. This is almost as busy a travel day as a lot of people hightail it out of town early, leave before tomorrow. The weather is worsening, so take your time, be patient, you'll get there. Commissioner Stern has probably been on the show as many times as any guest, I would think, because we've both been here for so long, so that is probably the case. We all know he is making his final lap through the league as he completes an incredible reign, and he joins us now. Commissioner, how are you?
I'm great. There's no final lap. I'm sitting here in my office working and talking to you.
Well, that's still completing your final lap,
okay.
As it is.
Okay, Feb 1, I'm out of here.
And what is on the list before Feb 1? What is it that fans can take note of that's important for you to do before Feb 1?
Just to do a little housekeeping internally, working with Adam to go over some matters, make some changes, work together, and in fact, make some appointments for post February 1 to help out some of our international offices and decide upon my travel schedule.
If you like presidents do, if you leave a note in the desk, what will it say?
The beauty of this office is that Adam could write the note because he's been with me for 22 years, and lots of policies have been made and changed together. So there's no note necessary. Just to keep smiling and don't take it personally.
Is there any unfinished business, or is it now just really just kind of wave and smile?
No, it's it seems like my desk is piled high. We're doing some reorganization and the like, and that's unfinished in certain departments and dealing with certain things like that. We're busy working on our January game in London and our December game in Mexico City. There's a lot of stuff going on, but there's nothing extraordinary. The hardest amount of business is how do I clean out this office after 36 years at the NBA? 30 as commissioner and 6 as general counsel and executive vice president.
36 years in the same place, a remarkable stay, and 30 as commissioner, which is historic in its own right.
I have so much junk.
You do. What's your favorite thing in the office?
All kinds of basketballs. I'm gifting things now. I had this great big bronze rendering, which is 2 feet high, of the statue outside of NBA City Restaurant in Orlando. Someone got it. I gifted an elephant from India that must weigh 30 pounds, maybe 40, to one of my colleagues. All kinds of stuff. I got all kinds of favorites. I just was looking at some of the Emmys that I have to wrap up for NBA playoffs and NBA other programming and the like. A lot of very fond memories looking at things from the Martin Luther King Holiday Commission and the Martin Luther King Monument in Washington. I must say that there are all kinds of things that we did here from television to diversity to, all kinds of good stuff. It's been a great fun.
Is there one you would point to? Is there one you will look back on most fondly? Is there one thing that you would take credit for that you said, this is what I'm most proud of?
I'm proud of a lot. Usually it has to do with things that, you know, maybe my long-term memory forgets the old stuff, but last month I was honored with the W.E. Du Bois Medal at Harvard University for service to the African and African-American community. And that focused very much on the diversity in the workforce, including coaching, general managers, and the like, in the NBA over three decades. And I'm very proud of that. It's been quietly accomplished, but it's something that I'm very proud of. I also have something here on NBA Cares, and I'm proud of that. You know, the court speaks for itself,
right?
Because our players are now at the top of the celebrity pyramid. I'm very proud of them and what their achievements are. It used to be that they were at the bottom of it because they were either black or they were misperceived. And I'm proud that they're now at the top. And the game is, you know, in great shape and the ratings are high and all of that stuff. But in that same context, we have gotten people to focus on what the role of corporations and sports leagues should be with respect to social responsibility, and that makes me very happy. And because we're out there for people to look at, our diversity is something that makes me very proud.
Talking with Commissioner David Stern, who will be leaving after 30 years on the job as commissioner, 36 in the NBA, and that is obviously a lifetime. Two things that you were very, very much influential in and was very important to you. One was international. Where would you say, and your game obviously has far more international popularity than does our football or our baseball, though baseball, you know, does spread pretty well. But basketball is a game that's played almost everywhere on the globe. So with that being the case, is it where you thought it would be internationally, or is there still, has it been a little slower than you thought it would be?
No, it is far broader and faster than I thought it would be, and it's still only a fraction of what it is going to be. We spent the summer having 14 3-on-3 games in a whole bunch of different countries. We are just concluding a series of clinics in Nigeria. We're embarking on a broad-scale plan to bring 1 million Indian kids into junior NBA and junior WNBA. We're working with the Chinese Basketball Association on player development, refereeing, and other things. We're working with Yao on an after-school program for Chinese kids and physical education. I would say that there is enormous growth potential that will be fueled in part by new TV deals, because the television markets in the rest of the world haven't been as mature as the NBA, but they're beginning to grow, and we're seeing lots of good growth in television. But we're also seeing growth in sponsors who want to sponsor clinics, because one of the things we talk about is exercise, health, and fitness, and about the values of our game, and that is resonating with governments and corporations and federations.
You know, interestingly, you fragmented your sport, maybe out of necessity, maybe not, maybe out of foresight, fragmented your sport from a television standpoint before anybody else did.
Stop this fragmenting.
Well, you
stuff.
Did.
That's a bad word. We were forward-looking?
Yeah, you were. You actually were. You saw it. Now, it might, like I said, it might have been out of necessity. It might not have been. You'd have to go back and tell me what the negotiations were like. But the point is, it turned out to be a forerunner, because clearly that is the future, and the future is going to hold a lot more. It's going to include the Googles and Apples and Yahoos and the and those folks, and there's going to be every different digital platform and different way of watching the game. Is that a good thing?
That's a good thing. We were not visionaries with respect to that. We were realists. We knew and made the judgment that cable, with its dual revenue stream, was going to be the wave of the future. And despite the lashes that I took from you and your partner back then.
Many.
We then watched as baseball went to cable and Monday Night Football went to cable and the bowl championship went to cable. And so there it is. But really, now we're looking at, we're moving into the next phase where the regional sports networks are going to start streaming games so that cable subscribers can get the game either on their regional sports network or their laptop or their handheld device. And yes, there are new potential entrants.
Yes.
Everyone's talking about everyone from Sony to Intel to Google to Apple. You know, possibly coming in and looking for sports programming. The one thing that is clear above it all is that in this changing landscape, the game changer is always sports and always has been and likely always will be. It attracts a kind of a special audience.
No question.
With a built-in community. I mean, really, it's the same underlying dynamic that makes your show so popular and going to have you on until we wheel you out.
That's very true. And, you know, interestingly, though, people don't realize, and I didn't. If I did, I probably would have tried to figure out some way to grab a franchise somewhere along the way. Did not know that sports was going to be able to provide unlimited content in a time when content is king. I mean, the leagues now, owners are in great places because there is such a dramatic need for content across the whole digital spectrum. Sports leagues are going to be enormously valuable.
I made a living on that proposition. When people talked about, I guess, what did you call it? Not DVRs, but
VCRs.
Right. How fast we forget.
Right.
You know, I would go out and say, it doesn't matter, this VCR. No one tapes sports events. And then the big deal is product insertion. I said, have you ever seen what our sidelines look like? Our scorer's table, our pole wrap, the side of our basket, our vomitoriums, our steps. So sports always was... of, in some cases, you might say necessity, ahead of the game.
Yep.
And it always delivered a community. And so, yes, content is really very important. And we have moved along that spectrum from over the air to cable to satellite to digital to, you know, to streaming to social media, which is becoming a very important part of what we do as well.
Do you need to control social media now as a commissioner who can look over the whole landscape? Do teams and leagues have to get involved here and somehow control the players from a social media standpoint?
No, not any more than we do now. That is to say, as long as the players know that tweeting or putting something on your Facebook page or putting a photo on Instagram is the same as walking outside the locker room and talking to a TV camera, we're not going to have a problem. There'll be occasional transgressions, and we'll remind the players in one form or another that they're transgressing, but we don't think it's a problem. In fact, we want to encourage our players, assuming they're doing it at the right time, as opposed to tweeting on the bench.
Right. That's what, you know, that and in the game and also.
Yeah, well, we have those rules, and the players are, by and large, the players are smarter than we are on the subject. They know what the business at hand is, and they know that you don't do that just up to before the game or right after the game. And after that, as long as you don't do anything that would make your family not proud of you, you can go ahead and do what you want to do. We think it's good. We think it's great. That's why we have almost 500 million followers, likes, however you count them up. And that's why we'll continue to be leaders in social media.
Do you feel comfortable with where player behavior is as a whole, which is such an issue with all sports?
Yes.
Do you feel comfortable about your players are getting it?
Well, yes, but let's wait till each morning's newspaper. The answer that I learned on 30 years of experience here, plus more, is that you're dealing with a pool of young men, 450 of them, between the ages of 19 and let's just say 35. We won't count Kobe or Tim Duncan. And so the fact of the matter is that there's going to be some behavior in that pool that is predictable but not acceptable. And I think that our players understand that, and subject to some of the disturbances that you're going to see along the way, by and large, I am extremely proud of our players and the way they conduct themselves.
Do you feel, you know, because for a long time there was this feeling that, you know, white America didn't like the NBA or didn't like the way the players look with tattoos and stuff like that. I get the feeling that has really melted away in recent years. If so, how did that happen?
Well, first of all, the Birdman helped us tremendously.
Yeah, well, I guess so, because it wasn't a racial issue then, of course. Yes, tattoo is tattoo, I guess, right?
Right?
Yes.
I'm being a little bit of a wise guy,
but
it's true.
But, you know, maybe it's true, too. Maybe
no,
you know,
it is true.
It is true. I guess a lot of white youngsters wear tattoos also.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I mean, have you watched Lady Gaga recently?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So of course. It's we were really the harbingers of things to come, not some aberration. This is the way people were doing it. But yes, you know, I think that sports has a huge role to play in getting people used to each other and focusing on the, you know, what is motivating them. You turn into a game, you're watching great basketball players, extraordinary athletes. You learn to accept the tattoos one way or the other, and you don't unless you're a dyed-in-the-wool racist. Comment on some continuing basis upon the racial composition of the game. There's something to be taught here, which is about how good are you? Do you have game? And that's what makes it all that exciting. I use our beloved, 71 Knicks to talk about Willis Reed from the, you know, backwoods of Louisiana and Grambling, and Bill Russell from Crystal City, Missouri and Princeton. The question to the Knicks fans was not where they came from, but what they could do on the court together, and if they were going to deliver a championship, wasn't that good?
Yes, and that was a great group of guys from all different, from Dave DeBusschere to Phil Jackson, all the way down the line, and then later Jerry Lucas, Earl Monroe. I mean, yeah, that was a wonderful collection. We're talking with David Stern. How about this latest thing, which I'm sure you probably never thought you'd get a question on, hazing, bullying, which I have to admit, that caught me by surprise on the professional level. I always think of professional athletes as being more independent contractors than I do a bunch of guys who are going to be, you know, hazing somebody.
I think we've all known that in training camps and the like, the rookie's supposed to get the lunch.
Right.
Or wear a silly backpack or something like that. I had very little idea that other things went on, but I have a little bit different take on it. I think that in a good and bad way, it tells you what sports has the power to influence, because we've now been talking for what seems like a year, but it's only 3 weeks, about Incognito and Martin.
Right.
And the story won't go away. Investigations and this and that. During that same period of time, I wonder how many young kids have killed themselves, committed suicide because of bullying. And the number is really probably much higher than people think. And wouldn't it be nice if we could use all of that power of sports to focus on the really important issues underlying bullying? And hopefully we will use it. That's the power of sport. So I think it's good that it's a discussion, but it would be great if that discussion could blossom into something broader about how we stop bullying at all levels of society.
Well, we have a team outside. We have a team in across the ocean or somewhere in Europe or somewhere else in the world in our lifetime?
I say, depending upon the we.
Let's say you and I.
In an interesting way, I'd say if we're... I think it's probably more likely that one NFL team would be located outside the U.S. because, in the short run,
right?
Because the scheduling issues are so relatively easy.
Right. So you see London for the NFL before you do anything.
Yeah,
right.
Well, we're going to play a game in London again. We have played 150 games outside the U.S., but we sort of set ourselves a higher bar, which was, if we're going to go to Europe, we better think about going with four or five teams.
Right.
And because you need that from the practical scheduling purposes, and that's going to take longer, but it's exciting to think about and exciting to talk about. And every year, American sports becomes more popular outside the United States, and that's a good thing.
Was it a goal of yours? You have been credited with a lot of things, and we're talking about David Stern. One of the things is that you were the commissioner who turned leagues into brands, that you were the guy who had the idea that the league is going to be a brand. Was that a plan of yours, or is it something that came by design, or was it something you kind of fell into?
It's something. Everything I've done, I've fallen into.
Yeah, sure. But seriously,
it's true.
Was that
all
something?
All of a sudden, when I took over, I said, we're like Disney. We have these theme parks. We got to keep going. Somewhere along the way, having read all the literature, I said, my God. There's a part of me, and you can't say this to fans because they want to know about the game, and I'm a big fan, and I love the game, and I could talk about that for hours, but there was a part of me that said, I'm a brand manager, because this brand, which is basketball, the NBA, is taking a lot of knocks along a lot of lines, having to do with our players, having to do with perceptions. And so, yes, we became brand manager, but then suddenly we became managers of media that you talked about because content is king. But, of course, the truth is we're all of the above. We go from putting on a spectacular show with licensing as well and sponsorships, et cetera, to protecting the brand of our players and our game, to managing the media content from over the air to cable to satellite to digital to streaming and doing it on a global basis. It's been a wonderful experience, and you have to learn an awful lot.
You know, I think of you, and I'm serious about this, having been through a lot of different commissioners in all the different sports and seeing it, the role of commissioner has changed some as economics has become much larger and as the divide between the players and the owners has become much more fierce as the years have gone by. I think the commissioner's role has changed to much more being a defender of the brand and a economic leader for the owners than someone who is kind of considered the face of the league. You're the last guy who has been around long enough that you have that kind of power and you have that kind of recognition. I think you're really the last commissioner who's going to be in that position.
Well, I guess what I would say to you, though, is that when you talk about protecting the brand and doing business for the owners, I guess I want to say one other thing. As the architect of the revenue sharing with our players, now 50% down from initially 57%, or actually it was 53% and went up to 57%, now it's down to 50%. When we do well for the owners, we do well for the players. When we protect the brand, it includes the players' individual brands and the league's brand. So I think that all commissioners are going to be in that role. So I'm not sure I agree with your final conclusion, but your analysis of what the job is of commissioner, I think that the divide between owners and players is a divide that gets focused on every time the collective bargaining agreement comes up. And hopefully we're now in the midst of at least a 7 and probably a 10-year collective bargaining agreement. In the interim, before we get back to fighting about how to divide the pie, the important thing is how do you grow the pie?
Right.
And I always felt that I was partnering with the players in that regard.
And I agree with that. And I think that you also have the ability of having stayed so long and taken over at a troubled time that you are bigger than the owners, and new commissioners are going to find that to be difficult with some of these powerful owners because owners aren't going to leave like they used to because these are now too valuable a property. So
well,
I think there's going to be a lot of staying, you know?
There's something to be said for for having admitted every owner on your watch.
Yeah, there a lot to be said. You okay. have a lot. You are in a much more dominant position than any owner in your sport.
Don't say dominant. It's just that I understand the owners understand what we do. I think that our owners, as a group, are terrific, and they appreciate that the group of people assembled at the league have nothing but the best interests of the league in heart, and they trust our judgment.
There is really no owner here who hired you, right? No one is still in position who said yes to you being named commissioner, correct?
I forget.
That's a different.
I'm getting old. I forget.
That is a.
But that's true. That's
yes,
true.
Which
but,
changes your position. You are the last czar of that. That's what you are. You
that's
that?
Ridiculous. It's time to sign off.
No, that's true. You are. And there's
actually,
nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, you know, there's no more Kennesaw Mountain Landis. There
yeah,
is, you know.
But you don't have time to be a czar. You know, what you have to do is you have to worry about all the things that Adam Silver and I are worrying about, from globalization to the game itself to marketing to social media to digital advancement. Look what's happening now with our video box scores, our sports view cameras in the arena, our SAP 4 trillion tidbits of information. There are such incredible changes going on, and that's where you know, CEOs and commissioners are going to have to spend their time. There's no more time for czaring.
I agree, but you know, listen, there's reality and there's not reality. I know you don't want to get. I know you don't want to take command of that, but I can say that from my position. Now, what is the technological advancement of making the game more available to the viewers that is maybe pushing the envelope during the game? I mean, is anything too intrusive, or are you one who believes we can make it as intrusive as we want?
No, you don't want to make it intrusive, but you want to make it accessible. And the fact of the matter is that the advancement is going to wind up being more about video replay in a better way to make the refereeing closer to 100% than it is, because that's what you like to do. The advancement is going to be statistics that are going to allow you to understand what's happening and what the coaches are looking at. It's no longer enough to say this guy shoots 50%. Wrong. He shoots 62% from the right and 38% from the left, and you better get him the ball in the right spot.
Gotcha.
I mean, there's so much going on.
Right. The metrics. Yes.
The metrics, and augmented by how fast somebody is, how fast the ball is moving, how much oxygen is being expended, when you should take a player out. I can't even imagine what's going on. I used to joke and say we won't call 3 seconds anymore because we'll put little electrical contacts on the bottom of the athletic shoes, and you know, you'll have a mild electric shock each time you go 3 seconds. But we're not going there. But you're going to see so much more that's you know, that's going to be happening.
Do you have a singular or a large regret? Is this one thing you wanted to accomplish that didn't get accomplished?
You know, the answer to that is not exactly. The only small thing I'd like to accomplish, I'd like to eliminate basket interference once and for all, because it's too hard for the refs to call. When that ball is up there on the cylinder, for crying out loud, let anyone bang it. Don't make the referees judge whether it was hanging over or wasn't. It's a distraction to an otherwise beautiful game.
You like that. And you think you're taking care of flopping, right? You like that one, right?
Yeah, that's fine. You know, we're just, you know, players don't want to be called floppers, but we shouldn't get carried away. I mean, people don't understand, oh, the refs should call flopping. The refs can't call flopping. The whole point is the refs were fooled. And so we got to go and tell the players, we caught you fooling the refs. Don't do it again.
You have a wonderful system underneath you, which you had nothing really to do with, in that, look at this year. You have an NCAA tournament, you have a college sport, which will, for at least 1 year, be a place where they get tremendous amount of attention, free publicity, develop stars for a league, and usher them off to your new commissioner on draft day. Maybe the finest class we've had in 15 or 20 years this year. What is the future relationship with the NCAA? And from your vantage point as an outgoing commissioner, how do you feel about this idea that is even maybe going to be put up to the NCAA for vote, the idea of somehow making players whole, if I don't want to use the word paying them, somehow making
the
them,
paying.
All right, let's say paying players, does that change the NBA's role in all of this?
No, it doesn't really. I think our relationship with the NCAA is excellent. Adam Silver has a great relationship with Mark Emmert, as do I. We think that if you decided to, maybe paying is, if you decided to that athletes could afford to go home and visit their parents,
right,
and do other things that strict scholarship athletes don't get a chance to do, that would be a good thing. And so I'm in favor of that. But at the same time, we're busy building up the NBA Development League in case there are players who do not want to go to college and want to come into professional basketball at the age of 18, as many college coaches and presidents are now saying, oh, we shouldn't take those players. Well, we're making sure we have a place for those players to go if that's what they want to do. But we'd like to do that in conjunction with the NCAA, and I think we will. And we have many things in common having to do with concerns about gambling, concerns about officiating, concerns about security. Our interests are aligned with the interests of the NCAA.
And you just opened my last question, which you knew was coming because you're a pretty smart guy. Leagues are going to have to deal with this, and you know it. As illegal bookmakers have got around the idea of paper trails by putting these offshore accounts now for their clients, and the government and the agencies now see the staggering amount of money that is being gambled, even though they can say it's not for really money, but they know that it is. And you have states and cities across America who cannot pay their bills because they have union bills going back three generations. Will we see a day where there is national gambling on all major sports?
I think that's a possible scenario down the road, but it requires time to build up the security apparatus and to come up with a fair system that doesn't involve 50 states doing their individual thing that's really going to be a disaster.
Does it scare you?
Yeah, it all does. But if you have enough time, you can deal with it. Remember, there's a lot of gambling outside the United States.
Tremendous amount.
Soccer and the like.
Right.
So we're working on it in terms of trying to keep our league as secure as possible. That's something we're working on.
Do the British do well with their leagues that you can go to a corner and bet on? Do they do well in keeping those leagues secure?
They do. The English Premier League is perhaps the most successful league in the world, and it has gambling sometimes on the premises of the games. So I don't mean to – there is some learning from the international, but we come from a different place.
Could you imagine the first 10 rows in an arena when there's a rough call? I mean, my God. I mean, can you imagine the scrutiny now versus what – imagine what this show would be like after when everybody can go home on the way home and wager on tonight's game?
That's terrible. but by the way, it's
going to happen.
It's almost inevitable.
It is inevitable because it's money that the government's going to want.
Yeah, but it has to, if it's going to get done, it has to be done by some adults. And the last time I looked, there hasn't been a good piece of legislation in a while coming out of the supposed adults in Washington.
Do you have you spent, in all honesty, have you spent any time on a forward plan in that regard in any way?
We always contemplate what the future might hold on a continuing basis. They call them tabletop exercises.
Yeah.
That's what good management does.
Very good. What kind of – how will Adam differ from you?
Well, he's not going to be as harsh on you.
Okay.
He's going to be nicer.
Oh, you think so?
He's not going to have as much fun by poking at guys like you. But.
Yeah.
But he's very thoughtful, and he's very smart, and he's harder working than I am. So it wasn't always that way, but it is lately. And he's going to be a breath of fresh air. People are going to love him.
Now, listen, you said once in jest, but either before you go February 1 or after you go, you have to come spend the show, okay? And yes. And do an entire show with me.
Okay, but then right? You're going to come to a WNBA game?
I will do anything you want me to do if you come do five. Now, you can do it before or after you leave. It's your choice.
I'm looking forward to it.
You we come can, do a whole day.
We'll talk to – how long is your day?
5.5 hours.
Boy, you're
you get, maybe, you, don't worry. I'll get your rate. I'll get you what people get paid for doing a shift. I'll get a shift
all right.
rate for you.
Okay, and
just in case you need any money in your retirement.
Okay, and pastrami.
That's it, and we'll feed you too. Absolutely.
Okay,
happy
in.
Thanksgiving.
You too. Always
thank
a
you.
Pleasure, Mike.
Commissioner,
bye-bye.
My pleasure. Thank you, David Stern, as smart a commissioner as there has ever been. Back after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.